ID, the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Hello, and thanks for joining us. You might not know much about it, but a specialized hair-like organelle called the cilium extends from cells in our body like an antenna and is vital to human health. Today, we're talking again with biochemist Michael Behe, professor of biological sciences at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, and a senior fellow at Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Behe is author of Darwin's Black Box, The Edge of Evolution, and most recently, Darwin Devolves, the new science about DNA that challenges evolution. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's always great to be with you.
Well, thank you very much. Well, on this episode, I'd like to talk with you about a recent article at Evolution News that details molecular systems you've discussed at length in your books. The article is called Cilium and Intraflagellar Transport, More Irreducible Complexity Than Ever. The occasion for the piece is a new article in the journal Current Biology, written by biologist Gaia Pagino. It's a primer about the cilium, detailing its function and discussing defects that can occur with the system. Mike, you've discussed cilium in your books. Can you start by reminding us what it actually is?
Yeah, sure. As you said, it's a little hair-like structure that kind of sticks out from cells. A few kinds of cells don't have it, like blood cells, but other cells have one, like sperm cells, and other cells have a bunch of them, like, say, cells in the lungs. And it was thought to be pretty simple back in the day, about 100 years ago, because microscopes then could only see this you know, rather unprepossessing hair sticking out from a cell. But as science advanced, we found out that it contains a lot of very sophisticated molecular machinery. It helps it do a number of different jobs.
Why do they say that cilia is fundamental for human health?
Well, for a couple of reasons. They do a number of things. First of all, I'm sure everybody knows about cystic fibrosis, the genetic disease that afflicts children and makes their lungs kind of gum up. One problem is that when that happens, the cilia that they can kind of beat like Roman oars or oars in a Roman galley in synchrony, hundreds of these things per cell. And in the lungs, they push the mucus up towards your throat where you can cough it out. And that helps keep lungs clean. In cystic fibrosis, the mucus is too thick to sweep up. But in ciliary diseases, that can happen too, just because the cilia lose their ability to move back and forth. Additionally, it turns out that, well, of course, cilia also can be used to move a cell, such as a sperm cell. The tail that comes out from the cell body of a sperm, as most people know, kind of beats back and forth and allows it to swim. And other cilia are actually, they don't move, but they're kind of like antennae that stick out from the cell and sense its environment. And they can signal the cell when it's time to do stuff. They regulate many cell processes and so on. So if cilia are not operating correctly, there can be really devastating consequences.
The post at Evolution News compares the transportation system inside cilia to a motorized two-way rail car inside a mine shaft. That's a cool way of looking at it. Is that an exaggeration, or could it be close to the truth here?
Well, it's in my view, it's kind of an understatement.
Oh.
It is true. It's absolutely true. If you think of a mine shaft going straight down into the earth, it's like a track, as the article says, that has rail boxcars coming up and going down and coming up and going down. And there's also automated equipment to put stuff in the rail cars that needs to go down and needs to come up. And there are motors that turn or that make the cars move along. And what the analogy doesn't quite capture is that these are all robots. There is no intelligent miners around turning things off and turning things on, making sure they run correctly. And it's also human engineers that build this thing in the first place. All of those tasks actually fall to the psyllium itself in cells. They actually construct themselves because there's no intelligent person around to actually put things together. So it's extremely complicated and much, much different from what it looks like.
Okay. Well, you've called cilia irreducible complexity squared. And I'd like you to just address the irreducible complexity part of it now. Can you remind us of that term that you have popularized and defended so well and how it fits with the cilia?
Sure. Back in 1996, when I wrote Darwin's Black Box, I pointed out a problem for Darwin's theory. Darwin's mechanism, he thought, had to go by tiny steps. And if a tiny step helped an organism survive, he thought natural selection would favor it, and then it would increase in the population. And then another mutation might come along, and if that helped, it would increase again. And he thought over time, this could build up pretty much anything. But I pointed out in the book that there are some things that can't be built gradually. And one I pointed to as an example from our everyday world was a mouse trap, a mechanical mouse trap. It has a number of components, and pretty much all of them are needed to work. And you can't put it together gradually in an undirected Darwinian fashion. And another example I showed is of molecular machinery. The mousetrap is a machine. Turns out that cells have lots of machinery in it too. And one of those machines is a cilium, those little hair-like things. Turns out that inside the cilium, they have a lot of tubules, things called microtubules, and they kind of gather together in the inside of a cilium, and they're kind of like iron rods lined up. There's about nine of them in a circle, and they're kind of tied together with linkers. And on each of these fibers, these girders, steel rods, there is a motor called dynein, and it can reach out from one rod, grab onto another one, and push it down. And as they slide by each other, that force causes it to bend in one direction and bend back in the other direction and back and forth. And I pointed out that you needed a number of different components for that. And that was the rods and the linkers and the motors and a number of other things too. But the point is it needed all of those things to work. And so it was irreducibly complex, so it couldn't be approached by Darwin's gradual mechanism. So it was a big problem for Darwin's theory. And in my second book, in Edge of Evolution, I couldn't think of another catchy phrase, so I just called it irreducible complexity squared, because in the years since I had first written about the cilium, it was discovered that it had to build itself, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, and that there are these rail cars and automated transportation systems and screening to make sure that the right cargo gets into the rail cars and all sorts of things. And in the second book, I pointed out that even the system to build these machines is irreducibly complex. If you didn't have the railroad tracks, it wouldn't work. If you didn't have the rail cars, it wouldn't work. If you couldn't tell which cargo was supposed to be put in the rail cars and so on. So That's an even worse problem for Darwin's theory. And I should point out that, of course, we only have time to go over it briefly, but in fact, there's lots and lots more stuff going on in the psyllium than we can say right here. The psyllium actually consists of over 200 different kinds of proteins, each of which is very, very specific for its job and necessary for the work of the psyllium.
Wow. Layers of complexity and design there. Well, Wise, looking at ciliopathies, which are the defects, things that can go wrong with mm-hmm. the cilia, why is that a good way to explore the intelligent design and irreducible complexity of it?
Well, in general, diseases, as genetic diseases, as bad as they are for people, you know, I guess a silver lining is that they can point scientists to answer questions about what is going on in a body and what is doing what. And in these so-called ciliopathies, one or more components of a healthy functioning cilium is broken. So maybe the components or one of the components that makes the rail car or one of the components that powers the movement or other things. And the diverse diseases that result from these things can give scientists clues about what they do. For example, in some ciliopathies, it leads to a disease such as retinitis pigmentosa. That's right. And in retinitis pigmentosa, your retina is non-functioning. It turns out that the rod and cone cells in your eyeballs that are sensitive to light actually use cilia to carry signals from the retina to the rest of the cell. And without those, you really can't see. And in other ones, symptoms like one's heart and liver are on the opposite sides from what they usually, where they usually reside. And that doesn't seem like a big deal, except there are other defects that come along with that.
Right.
And many other problems. So the ciliopathies can help point scientists to what these things do. And when scientists have followed them, they see that that cilia are involved in many critical functions, especially of human physiology.
Okay. Well, I noticed the author of the Current Biology article, the primer on this, doesn't mention evolution. Is that instructive in any way?
Yeah, it sure is. Way back in 1996, when I first wrote Darwin's Black Box and described these things, I started with just I described the cilium and argued that it was irreducibly complex and therefore a problem for Darwinian evolution. And I pointed out that up to that point, up to 1996, that there had been no papers published in the scientific literature by real scientists that described how such a very complicated and seemingly interactive and irreducible structure could have been put together by a Darwinian process, step by tiny step. And here, 25 years later, that's still the case. As you mentioned, the review article doesn't even contain the word evolution or evolutionary or any cognate. There has been no progress in 25 years on how such complex molecular machines might arise. And I think that by itself is a very strong indication that Darwin's theory is a very poor framework to try to understand the complexity of the cell.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting. Well, that leads me to my next question. How does it make you feel to see your research on molecular machines like cilia and flagella being confirmed again and again by other scientists?
Well, I have mixed feelings about it. First off, you know, it makes me feel glad because, you know, who wants to be wrong anyway? So seeing that nobody has contradicted that claim of mine or the argument of mine about irreducible complexity is gratifying. And on the other hand, it makes me feel a little frustrated because by and large, the scientific community is still very adamantly opposed to essentially waking up and smelling the coffee. They still claim they pay lip service to Darwinian evolution. And when they manifestly can't, such as in this review article, they'll just, you know, not raise the topic. So even as the cell is recognized to be much, much more sophisticated and much, much more complex than even I had thought back in 1996, still science is stuck with this philosophical presumption that they can't acknowledge the design of the cell. So it's nice to be right. But I wish I had more company.
Yeah. Well, that's got to be frustrating, but you're doing a great job of encouraging science to keep up with you. Well, what's the best way, final question, for someone to learn to truly appreciate the amazing machinery and engineering in their own bodies? You know, I feel like a lot of folks just walking by me each day just don't know this stuff. You know, they don't see it. They don't dig into it. What's a good way to do that other than to read every word you've written in your books, of course?
Well, it turns out that Discovery Institute has a number of videos that concentrate on various topics about the sophistication of life and the problems it raises for the theory of evolution. And there are short readings that you can find, track down, that'll tell you in entertaining ways about this stuff. But you've also, it's fun, but also if you really want to get into it, you'll have to kind of roll up your sleeves a little bit because, complexity, in order to really appreciate the complexity, you can't simplify it.
Right.
At some point one has to bite the bullet, but everybody, and that's for folks who really want to get into it, but everybody can become aware of these interesting things. It turns out that you, human being, are much more complex than people of Darwin's day thought. And if you think of, say, the X-Men, the movie series, the X-Men, we're a lot like that because we have these hidden powers that we hadn't imagined, and our bodies are, really cooler than we had reason to suspect even a short time ago. So, I encourage people to become more and more aware of it because it really impresses you with what it takes to make you run. And it also shows that the existing way of thinking about it is really kind of out of date.
Yeah. Well, we certainly owe it to ourselves and others around us that we love and value to just know this stuff and to really have an appreciation for it. Well, Mike, thank you for taking time out to talk with us today. I relish every opportunity to chat with you.
Thanks, Andrew. It's always fun.
Folks, if you can breathe, eat, smell, taste, hear, and walk, you can be thankful for the intelligent design of cilia that makes those pleasures possible. Learn more about Mike Behe's work and his books at michaelbehe.com. That's Michael Behe, BEHE.com. And if you enjoy ID the Future, give it a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. That feedback helps others connect to the show, and I really appreciate your support. So for ID the Future, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.